There's an ongoing class action suit on behalf of those prison inmates. What's the status of that case, and what effect might the outcome of Mumia's case have on that matter?
It was filed and it's pursuing through the courts, the class action lawsuit. Mumia's case won't directly affect that lawsuit, but what it will do is it will force the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections and the corporate Correct Care Solutions healthcare company, which has the contract to provide medical care for Pennsylvania inmates, it will force them to develop protocols and to actually treat people with active hepatitis C. So we're confident that if we win this case in federal court, that it will change the possibilities for treatment for many inmates in Pennsylvania.
Back to Mumia's case, the hearing began on Friday. Was Mumia able to attend? How long do you expect the hearing to continue, and when do you expect a final decision from the court?
This was a really historic opportunity. Mumia was present through video, Skyping or streaming. He attended the entire hearing. He was on the witness stand. He was cross-examined. So that is something that hasn't happened. He performed very well. Our witnesses, we presented our case the first day, did a very, very good job. And though this is America, and it's often the case that prisoners and prisoner litigants don't prevail, the judge was really thorough and precise and very clear about the standards. We have the facts on our side. We have the law on our side, you know, and we are going to continue to work this case. Now, it is life and death. It is a situation where we need to be as assertive and aggressive as possible, because this is a disease that is... It just continues. I mean, he has an infectious disease that if they don't treat it, it could very likely cause permanent, irreversible damage. And the damage is happening now. So we're going to still do this. It takes everything. It takes people's actions. It takes a lot for the courts to actually deliver justice. And so we're doing it. We're there. We're going to do it. We are going to be there tomorrow in Scranton, Pennsylvania, and we're going to continue to advocate for justice for Mumia and other prisoners.
That was Noelle Hanrahan, director of Prison Radio. For FSRN, I'm Nell Abram.
The hedge fund manager who caused a furor earlier this year by raising the price of an AIDS treatment drug by 5,000% has been arrested on securities fraud. Martin Shkreli has been charged by the Securities and Exchange Commission with defrauding investors and running a Ponzi scheme at two of his former companies, the hedge fund MSMB Capital Management and the pharmaceutical firm Retrofin Incorporated. These charges do not cover Shkreli's activities as CEO of Turing Pharmaceuticals, the company that manufactured the AIDS treatment drug that recently propelled Shkreli into the spotlight. According to the director of the SEC's Division of Enforcement, Shkreli is alleged to have perpetrated a series of frauds on investors in his hedge funds and Retrofin's shareholders in order to cover up his poor trading decisions. Last week, Shkreli was fired by the drug maker Calibios, and on Friday, a class action lawsuit was filed in federal court in California on behalf of the company's shareholders. The suit alleges Shkreli made false or misleading statements and failed to disclose material information about the company's business.
Plans to remove Confederate monuments from the city of New Orleans have hit a snag. Last week, the New Orleans City Council voted 6-1 to remove several monuments which commemorate Confederate leaders from city property. The measure was immediately signed into law by New Orleans Mayor Mitch Landrieu. On Thursday, however, a coalition of preservation groups and the group Sons of Confederate Veterans filed a lawsuit in federal court to block the removal. The suit claims that removal would violate local and federal law, and also that it would violate both the U.S. and Louisiana state constitutions. Plaintiffs are asserting that they have a First Amendment right to free expression, free speech, and free association, which they exercise by maintaining and preserving the historic character of New Orleans, including its monuments. The city council claimed the statues were offensive and honored pro-slavery and white supremacy movements. If the removal goes forward, it's expected that it will cost $175,000, which will be paid for by a private donor. An initial hearing on the suit is scheduled for January 14th. Meanwhile, the city will hold off on removing the monuments.
For the first time in 30 years, it's now okay, according to the federal government's Food and Drug Administration, for gay men to donate blood. But there's a catch. The person donating must not have had sexual contact with another man for at least 12 months. The FDA says the 12-month window is sufficient, according to the best available scientific evidence, to prevent passage of the human immune virus that causes acquired immunity deficiency syndrome. So in effect, the ruling allows gay men to give blood as long as they have practiced abstinence for a year or more.
And now we hear the latest in worker-related news from our friends at laborradio.org.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. Global Trade Watch says the requirement for country of origin labels on meat was killed with a provision tucked into the omnibus spending bill just passed by Congress. The World Trade Organization ruled those labels a trade violation and imposed a billion-dollar trade sanction unless the U.S. got rid of the labeling requirement. Global Trade Watch's Melinda St. Louis says even though she's an experienced trade expert, it's still astounds her that a policy widely supported by the American people is struck down by a trade agreement.
Whenever I see this type of ruling, it still surprises me. I still can't believe that something as concrete and as common sense as country of origin labeling of our food would be ruled a trade barrier. It almost takes it to an extreme that I wouldn't even believe that they would go to.
Global Trade Watch says with this action, President Obama can no longer claim that trade pacts can't undermine public interest policies. NABIT CWA Local 41 members say Chicago Access Network TV is engaged in punitive actions against workers following a union vote. The workers say the crackdown by management is coming as efforts to negotiate a contract are underway. NABIT CWA workers, community members, and clergy will protest the anti-union actions Monday at CAN-TV's new building at 1309 South Wood Street in Chicago. For this week's WIN Sports Minute, Mitch Lawrence is in the Christmas spirit a little ahead of schedule, and that means presenting some gifts.
We're going to present our first gift to Rajon Rondo of the Sacramento Kings. Rondo is getting a big piece of coal for Christmas. The veteran point guard was recently suspended by the NBA for using anti-gay slurs against a referee, Bill Kennedy, in a recent game. The suspension should have been for at least three games, but for reasons unknown, the league let Rondo off lightly with just a one-game suspension. Rondo also did not offer an apology, as he should have. Instead of saying he was sorry, he tried to say that he was in the heat of battle when he used the offensive language. That not only was a lame excuse, but the manner in which he sent out the so-called apology was even worse. As so many athletes do now when they don't want to face the music and face the media, he used his Twitter account to send out that flimsy apology. He should have addressed reporters where they could have asked him follow-up questions about his views towards gay people. And that would include Bill Kennedy, one of the NBA's top refs. Once Rondo was suspended, Kennedy went public for the first time that he is gay. So Rondo gets a well-deserved lump of coal in his stocking. And the way things are going in pro sports, I'm pretty sure that some other athletes will find that very same present waiting for them in another week.
Brought to you by the IBEW, 750,000 men and women powering the way for an American comeback. Information on how to become an International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Power Professional is online at ibew.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
A lawsuit filed in federal court has called on the U.S. Treasury Department to investigate many U.S.-based tax-exempt entities who raise money for Israeli settlements. The suit alleges an estimated 100 organizations are violating laws against money laundering, which prohibit the transfer of money to assist illegal activities. The petitioner also contends these organizations break laws against mail fraud, war crimes, and financing terrorism. Attorneys with Martin McMahon's an associate who filed the lawsuit suggest the Treasury Department might recoup up to $1 trillion for taxpayers. The donated money has gone to construct Israeli settlements, and the organizations involved get tax breaks for sending donations to settlements. The lawsuit claims that instead of charitable activities, the money raised by these groups helps to pay for paramilitary activities and land theft.
And now, the latest news and developments from the occupied territories in Palestine from the International Middle East Media Center in Bethlehem.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center at www.immc.org for Monday, December 21st, 2015. Israeli troops injured a Palestinian child in West Bank clashes and kidnapped fishermen from Gaza shoreline. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. Israeli forces shot and wounded a 14-year-old Palestinian boy with live fire during clashes in the outskirts of Silwad in the eastern Ramallah on Monday afternoon, according to Palestinian medics. Ambulance crews said that Ahmed Jamal Kantawi, 14, was shot and wounded in his stomach, leg and hand and had suffered severe loss of blood. According to media reports, clashes broke out between Palestinian schoolchildren and Israeli forces at the western entrance of Silwad. Security sources said that Israeli forces have been chasing Palestinian schoolchildren in the area when a number of Palestinian police officers arrived on scene and ordered the Israeli border police officers to leave and threatened to use their weapons if they refused. Also on Monday, Israeli soldiers kidnapped 26 Palestinians in different districts of occupied West Bank during excessive military invasions and searches of homes and property, the Palestinian Political Prisoner Society, PPS, has reported. The PPS said that most of the abductions took place in the southern West Bank district of Hebron, where the soldiers kidnapped 11 Palestinians. Additional kidnappings were also reported in the occupied Jerusalem, Tul Karim, Nablus, Ramallah and Bethlehem areas. In other news, the Israeli Supreme Court decided to release on Monday two Israelis accused of burning the Dawabsha family in the village of Duma, occupied Nablus, 4 months ago. Media sources said that the Israeli police is expected to release other detainees accused of the crime, provided that they stay under the house arrest. The minister of the Israeli army, Moshe Yaalon, said in a statement last week that those who committed the crime of Dawabsha family arson attack are identified for the Israeli army, but there is no evidence to bring them to trial or to charge them. Elsewhere, Israeli Navy attacked on Monday afternoon a Palestinian fishing boat off Gaza City shoreline and kidnapped all fishermen on board. Palestinian sources said that the Israeli Navy have kidnapped the fishermen and took them to the Israeli seaport of Ashdod. And that's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was the Monday, December 21st, 2015 news roundup from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by George Mawi and me, Ghassan Banoura.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Don Zer, Rosalind Scott, Robin Ryan, Joanna Peterson, and Martin Dodge. The producer is Doug McVeigh. Our engineer is Danielle Parks. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews or look for us on Twitter at KBOO News. If you'd like to call your elected representatives about any issue you've heard on the news tonight, here are the phone numbers, so grab a pen and get ready to write. The local number for Senator Ron Wyden is 503-326-7525. The number for Senator Jeff Merkley is 503-326-3386. Oregon Governor Kate Brown's number is 503-378-3111. Portland Mayor Charlie Hales can be reached at 503-823-4120. You are listening to KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath, 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River, 91.9 FM. I'm Roslyn Scott.
And I'm Ken Jones. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, on The Abe and Joe Show, Joe Uris hosts a two-part discussion looking at how the Democratic National Committee's trying to shut out Bernie Sanders and how the U.S. Constitution upholds property rights and prevents solutions to the environmental crisis. At 9 on Alternative Radio, journalist and author Loretta Napoleone speaks on the ISIS crisis. At 10, it's Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. At 11, Stage and Studio presents a special program from the Humankind series on Thich Nhat Hanh, renowned Vietnamese monk, writer, and leader. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, host Joseph Gallivan talks about Art Basel, Miami, with Jane Beebe of PDX Contemporary Art and painter and sculptor Eugenia Pardue. Thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you aren't a current member, this is a great time to become one and have your pledge double all this month. Just go to kboo.fm and click on Donate Today. Good night, Roslyn.
Good night, Ken. Good night, Danielle.
Prison Pipeline is a radio program dedicated to educating the public about the Oregon criminal justice system. Topics include incarceration and reentry, addictions and mental health, elections and laws, victims' rights, and criminal justice reform. The program presents a unique understanding of the criminal justice system, addresses the root causes of crime, and challenges the status quo. It seeks to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safer, healthier, and more just society.
Prison Pipeline airs on Monday evenings